Hi, everybody. First off, thank you for coming. For folks who don't know me, my name is Mike Bush. I run marketing for a company named Town Logistics. I'm also a board member for Futureports, as you can kind of guess. And as a side hustle, I run a podcast. And the podcast focus is nobody in this room got into logistics and supply chain on purpose. We all fell into it, which is a direct quote. Or we've got a mom, dad, aunt, uncle, somebody who was in the industry before. So the podcast idea was to say, hey, there's really cool opportunities here. This is a cool industry to work in. And, you know, if you're a newer recent college grad, maybe you should be thinking about us. So I'm going to be recording. So FYI, just be aware of that. But on the Futureports side, I'm really excited to see everybody here. This is a tremendous organization. I've been lucky enough. I spoke at a conference about 5 years ago and have been involved ever since. Kat wrote me into that. So I'm delighted to be here. Happy to moderate this little chat. And before I get going, I thought I would have Kat do kind of a 2-minute overview of here's Futureports. But I also want to give a quick shout out to Marine Exchange. This place is a really cool office. It's my first time here, and what an amazing view. Unfortunately, Mother Nature wasn't really on our side today. But otherwise, there'd be some tremendous B-roll for the podcast. Mm-hmm. So Kat, take it away.
Hello, good morning, everyone. Glad to see so many friends here and on the screen as well, Claudette. I've been the chair of Futureports for 3 years now. I joined the organization when Elizabeth, lucky we have you here today, was executive director, and that was, I think, around 2015, which was the 10th anniversary of the Futureports. Then I was reviewing the emails I was getting from you about the organization and what was happening and how Futureports was engaging with the community. So as we all know, about 20 years ago, there was the ports were facing difficult times in the early 2000s. Rising demands met with a pressure to clean up. On the LA side, it was the China shipping lawsuits. On the Long Beach side, it was PRJ. And some of the in the results that happened, the lawsuit that was won by the community, first time in history, combined with other factors, caused the work at the ports to stop. So the ports could not develop any projects, could not develop terminal operations. And so until they would figure out how to do it more sustainably. And so that sparked the discussions about the green port policy and ultimately work together on the cleaner action plan. And it's not to say that the ports did not have their environmental programs, because they did, but some of them before the green port policy was the Healthy Harbor about, but this initiative was very much unknown to the public. And I think that transparency that came with the green port policy and then cleaner action plan is, it really helped the community and everybody else to get engaged and do a lot of amazing things that happened in the last 20 years. So Futureports was brought around that time, 2005, and in the effort to bring the community and business together and make sure that there is a balanced approach. So we are growing, but we are growing green. And so I'm not sure, since we have Elizabeth, maybe we could ask you to say a few words how it was then, just, you know. Sorry, Mike, is that okay?
I'll just take a brief moment.
Hey, I've been waiting for it.
Oh, we got an interesting
topic.
So, welcome, Commissioner. It did start in the late 90s. We had Pier T issues there, and the founders of Futureports, a gentleman named Ralph Larrison, who was the CEO of Connolly Pacific at the time, and George Kiefer, a very prominent attorney, decided that looking at what was happening in the community, everyone was in silos. There was no communication between businesses, between the community, And the ports were basically hand-tied with what they could do. At every community meeting we went to, there was no one speaking up for industry. It was only communities that were, you know, opposing everything. And as businesses in the port, they were frustrated. Ralph and George were frustrated that, where's business? Where is the voice of business? Why is no one coming to do this? And they looked at, because they asked me at the time, I worked for the LA Chamber as policy manager, and they came to me and they said, who are all the organizations? Who are the people in the port? There was AJIC, there was Propeller Club, there were the others, but all of those organizations, no one at that time were writing letters, were doing advocacy. They were social and they talked about issues, but they were not actually being active. So they said, you know what? If nobody else is going to do it, we'll start our own. So they started their own organization. They raised the money. And then a year later, then I came back and as the first full-time executive director. And we started, in 20 years ago, we started bringing everyone to the table. We started the outreach to the communities. We started bringing in labor. We were the first organization that labor was a participant in. And part of that was my relationship with labor. I had very strong ties to labor before that. So they said, okay, if you're doing it, then we'll come in. And then over the years, over the past 20 years, and that has just grown and deepened. And now, you know, there's a lot more discussion, but 20 years ago, there was no discussion. There was no one speaking up. There was no one doing that. So it's really been a sea change of difference, you know, in what's happening. I couldn't be prouder of the work that everyone's done, the work that Future Ports has done, you know, plus the community as a whole, and the ports. The ports have changed a lot, too, with their involvement in community and so forth. So.
And yep. So fast forward to 10 years later, when I joined in 2015, Future Ports was present at the commission meetings, at the city meetings. It was really a lot of outreach and go and really working with the communities, bringing everybody to the table and have these meaningful conversations.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Kat,
Thank you for letting me share that.
I know, of course. Actually, it leads into my first question, so I'm going to put you on the spot again. You know, obviously a lot has changed over 20 years. What would the two of you say you're most proud of when it comes to Future Ports?
The first? Or as current chair?
Thank you. I think Future Ports has a tremendous legacy with looking at the issues, bringing everybody together. I think we... one of the items that we had for a long time was looking at the EIRs. When the whole process started, when the ports were changing their businesses and were able to operate after the break, there was a lot of EIRs to be reviewed. At some point, I think were like 15 EIRs at the same time. I think that was from my conversations with Rick Cameron back a few years ago. And Future Ports had a committee dedicated to reviewing the EIR. So I think where we stand right now, that mission has been accomplished. We don't have that many problems. I think the EIRs are still there, but there's not as many, and there's a really good process, and it's all working with the communities, although we still have some difficulties with, I think, telling the community and making sure that all the community members know how far we've come. Whenever we see in recent discussions and we see these graphs with pollution at the port, they don't show the same graphs that were 20 years ago, so we can actually see how much has changed. And the ports in certain newspapers still say that the ports are just single source of pollution, which doesn't make sense to me. And And there is a tremendous progress. There's so many things that were accomplished, and not just by the ports, not just by the community or by the industry. It's just by working together and figuring out things. And Future Ports was in the middle of this action. And I think many of them can be applicable to other industries, to other businesses, to other regions. And so if we would look at this whole process as what can be replicated somewhere else, we would be in so much better position. So I think that's one of the legacy items for me.
And just to add on to that, I just think that being the catalyst of change, the change of getting the ports involved, getting labor involved, getting us not working in our silos, getting the commissioners. We're blessed to have two commissioners here today, Commissioner Wiseman from Port of Long Beach and Commissioner Williams from Port of Los Angeles. But, you know, back in the old days, we had to go to every single commission meeting in order to learn anything about what was going on at the ports, because there wasn't the communication. We didn't have, you know, there wasn't the technology, but also commissioners were not out in the communities either. I know Commissioner Wiseman remembers, you know, how it was and part of within the Port of Los Angeles is that many of the commissioners are not local. We're thankful to have a couple of local commissioners now. But labor is now part of the commission. I mean, it's just a much broader mm-hmm. spectrum and getting that involvement. And I think that Future Ports was a big catalyst in that. So getting all the people talking, all the different industries, having the open lines of communication and not everyone working in their silos like they used to.
In terms of lessons learned, 20 years is a long time. Is there one moment where you're like, boy, I wish I would have done that differently? You know, is there sort of a blooper reel behind the scenes for Future Ports?
Oh, I'm sure, but I don't know if we necessarily want to talk about it. I think that probably one of the things that we could have done better is just the communications of, like Kat said, getting the message out. Getting that in. I think that there are sometimes things don't want to be heard. And, you know, you get stuck in a message and that's the message and that's the message you're going to stay with. But I think that being a little more, having the resources to do more communications and to get that information out. Future Ports is a small organization. There's, you know, limited resources. We did partner a lot with the ports and with others. But if there's one thing I wish we could have done different, wish we would have had more resources for communication on successes, getting that information about the successes and the accomplishments made.
And I've been on the board for 3 years. I jumped straight to the chair position. And because of change composition of our board and different people that don't know the history, we don't have Elizabeth on a daily basis, so I kind of became the historian of the organization. And that and I bring back a lot of things that I remember or I can dig out from my files, and I think we are all familiar with the changes that happened. Elizabeth left. We had another executive director. Then it was a little bit of period of trying to figure out that find another executive director. And I think in that same process, we were doing things. We were still meeting at the committees. We were still reviewing EIRs. We were still doing the advocacy, but because of some of the chaos, we were not effective at communicating these issues to our membership and beyond. And I think that also caused, natural. People don't know that we are still active and doing things, so they assume that we didn't do anything. So I think that was one of the things that, one of the lessons learned, no matter what you have, the change management, it's always good to communicate what's happening and that the things are still happening. And I've been a proponent of make sure that we have not just the upcoming events on the website, not just upcoming issues or things that are happening today, but show the the past. And I think we have the opportunity to bring that past documents, past presentations. I still have a bunch of presentations. We had, we have monthly meetings, and people were invited and show these presentations. And I occasionally look at them for various reasons. And many of these issues are still issues today. So I think it would really show the breadth of that organization if we just bring them up. I think in the past, the notion was, we don't want to share these documents because if people don't pay and participate, then they don't get the benefit. But I think enough time passed that we can actually make some of these documents and information available just for the historic perspective and the legacy.
Oh. Elizabeth, you touched on one of my favorite parts of Future Quartz, which is the giant community that's involved, right? When you look at the small but mighty team today, you've got members who are from the ports. You've got attorneys, you've got rail, you've got investors, you've got labor, trucking. I have a list here.
It's a long list.
It is a long list. It's a small but mighty list, which is kind of amazing. And it's collaboration across the board. So if I can ask the commissioners to do a quick introduction and talk a little bit about, quite frankly, again, I'm sorry, Lee, if you missed this, we're recording a podcast here as well, aimed at kind of a younger generation. So if I could start with a very basic question that most people in this room probably understand, but what does the commissioner of the port do?
Great question. My name's Lee Williams. I've been a harbor commissioner for Port Los Angeles for almost 2 years now. And so in my perspective on being a harbor commissioner might differ from others. And because I'm really focused on the community aspect, as you had mentioned before, I'm one of the local commissioners now for the Port of Los Angeles. And I feel like my responsibility is making sure, as a fiduciary of the Port of Los Angeles, we are creating economic benefit for the community. You know, we talk about the pollution, but we also want to talk about the positive aspects of the port. My main focus is making sure that we have the jobs and opportunities to create, you know, a lot of economic benefit. We talk about the Port of Los Angeles having 1 in 11 jobs in LA. You know, the impact of the San Pedro Bay ports is 1 million jobs across the Southern California, 3 million jobs across the nation. Those kind of things are really important. If our only contribution is to export dollars to foreign national companies, that I see as a failure for the Port of Los Angeles. And so if we're going to live this close to the port and listen to the noise pollution and have, you know, even though the pollution has gone down dramatically, I also think about that in terms of pollution, you know, let's say we've made an 85% progress on removing pollution from the air. That last 15% is just as massive a lift as the first 85%. So making sure that we're still on track to be able to hit our 100% zero emission goals, but also being able to share that with other ports, making sure that Seattle and Oakland and our other and San Diego and our other port partners have an opportunity to learn from our mistakes, learn from our progress, and be able to implement some of the clean air initiatives that we've been able to be successful with. So that's my
turn.
The Port of Long Beach, the Harbor Commission is like the board of directors. We're the governing board for the Port of Long Beach. And we delegate to our staff the management of the port, but we set policy, approve contracts. You know, I have to say that the Harbor Commission has been, I mean, we have a very supportive staff in terms of the environment, but the Harbor Commission has also been a driving force behind the environment. Now, one of the advantages of being from a smaller city than Los Angeles is in Long Beach, 1 out of every 5 jobs is connected to the Port of Long Beach. And then 575,000 jobs in this Southern California region and 2.6 million jobs across the nation. So when you combine the economic engine that are the two ports, it's really substantial, not only locally, but nationally. Our commissions are in some ways very similar, in some ways a little different.
Commissioner Williams, I'll call you Lee. People can call me Sharon. We do see, I do think there's a difference between what the Harbor Commissioners see their role as from years ago. You know, we do go out and speak in the community and attend events. And one of the things about our sponsorships is we go to a lot of events and meet people and talk about the port. And, you know, when we talk about getting our word out, I realize I'm doing more than introducing myself.
That's awesome. That's great.
But, you know, when we talk about getting the word out, I always tell people, you know, whenever I say at an event that we have the world's first zero emission terminal, people clap. They're always surprised, and that lets me know that they don't know that. So it is certainly part of our role. In it, I mean, we have a great communications and community relations department at the port, but I do think it's also the commissioner's role to be out there and talking about what we do, and more importantly, listening to what people think about what the ports are doing.
Can I also mention one thing? One thing that I was really impressed by the Port of Long Beach is the outreach they gave to me when I first came on as a commissioner. Sharon and Bonnie Lowenthal were amazing in trying to, you know, really figure out ways that we as two competing ports can find opportunities to work together, because there's a lot of ways that the synergies lift up both ports. So that was one thing that I was super appreciative.
Sure. And if I can keep a conversation with you too, you know, when you talk to an organization like Future Ports, what are the things that we can be doing to support you?
I think Kat mentioned some really good things in terms of just getting the word out there in terms of some of the progress that has been made. A lot of people, you know, still see it's easy to dump on the port. I mean, we have a $2.6 billion budget, right? And so we're the big bad bear here in town, but we are beholden to our community members. We are a direct benefit to the community, and reminding folks that we're focused on that and making those connections and articulating that, I think, is really important.
You know, the other thing is you do have a lot of different folks at the table here. And when both the Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles are applying for grants, having partners to say, yes, this is important to our community is important. I probably don't need to tell you all that you know, what will happen to the federal grants we've already been awarded, and ones that we're hoping to get are very uncertain at this time. And so, you know, the only thing getting in the way of us getting to zero is money. Our zero emission terminal cost $2.6 billion. And that opened in 2020. So I don't even know how much more it would be to open that terminal today. But all our terminals need to be zero emission. And so it's going to take a tremendous amount of money to get there. And it can't all be paid for by the ports, or we would not be competitive with other ports. And that's really, you know, it's a balancing act of spending, trying to get revenue to be able to get to zero and remain competitive. And, you know, I'm sure you're all aware of the problem that in turning over the truck fleet, it's a very expensive proposition. So having other voices who say, yes, this is important to our community, that the ports get to zero, that our pier beyond dock rail get built so that we can put more cargo on rail. Those are things that I think you can be very helpful with us. And then also you need to tell us how we can help you. It has to be a two-way street.
And can I add, on a much higher level, if we're really combating climate change and trying to attack the problem in a holistic view nationwide, our two ports are the cleanest ports in the nation, and people need to know that. But the cost of being first is very expensive, right? And so I won't mention what port, but we had during the TPM conference, we had one port meet with us that have never, they still don't plug in their ships, and they wanted to figure out how we do. And, you know, I'm really proud of the fact that, you know, some of our cruise ships, the first time they've ever plugged in, even though they might be housed in Miami, the first time they ever plug in is here at the Port of LA. And so we've come a long way. And when we demonize the Port of Los Angeles as being a really dirty port, and we displace cargo or we push cargo to dirtier ports that are truly dirty, We're not doing the work of climate change. Mm-hmm. We are actually making things worse. So helping the port, you know, obviously financially, you know, it'll probably take $20 billion just to replace all the equipment at the Port of LA. And we have, hopefully still in play, $412 million coming for the federal government. And that with money coming from Port of LA and some private partners could be $644 million. All of that equipment is driver operated. So it could create a market opportunity for companies in Mississippi to build this equipment here in the country and then bring it into the Port of LA so that we can start replacing our dirtier equipment. And that could create an open market so that other ports can benefit from the innovations that we were able to push on, just like we did with the EVs here in California. Very similar when it comes to the yard equipment. If we could create that market opportunity and get those innovations and be able to spend the money to ramp up those factories and the manufacturing, that could be significant benefit for the entire nation.
Yeah, you know, as I like to say, the Port of Long Beach was the first port southeast of Los Angeles to plug in the ships with shore power. LA was first, and so it's yeah. But you know, Lee's obviously is absolutely right. There's, I feel that both our ports, as the largest ports in the nation, of course, LA being number one and Long Beach being number two, except in January when we were number one. no, but as you can tell, we're more friendly. But I think we have an obligation to lead the way, not just in what we do, but at our own ports, but in helping other ports. And because obviously what we do in terms of pollution affects our local community. But what we do in terms of greenhouse gas affects the whole world. And so we do have an obligation to lead, I believe.
Mike, can I add something?
Yeah, I was actually just about to go to you. Perfect.
Because I feel like for the people in the room, maybe not so much because we all know much more than your typical audience, but for the people on the podcast, I want to make sure that we also say, both commissioners mentioned the millions of jobs nationwide, and we really have to emphasize that these million jobs are in every congressional district. It's not just a bunch of jobs in this state or that state. It's in every place in America.
No, go on.
And then addressing a few other points, Commissioner Williams mentioned Seattle, and when the Cleaner Action Plan had announced the fees for trucks, Seattle actually ran an ad saying to their customers, "Oh, come to Seattle because we don't have this crazy truck fees." And it was an official ad.
Yes.
This is how bad it was. And I would argue that these two ports, they are not just the cleanest in the nation. I think they're cleanest in the world. At least the research that I've done, addressing all the five sources of pollution all at once, it's not like the ports had a choice to pick one or the other, like all the other ports in the world have. They had to do everything at the same time frame. And then I was researching how are other ports around the world do on the shore power front. So China does not have the requirements. They are actually building, they are providing the shore power capabilities, but it's voluntary. In Germany, I think in this decade, they were opening their first shore power capability for container ships. Before they had, I think, for the cruise ships. But in Europe, we are talking about this decade to have this capability for container ships. So I believe that with everything, all the solutions that were implemented in this area, we were absolutely the forefront of all the things that happened.
Kat, it feels like somebody should write a book about this.
May I ask a favor? I don't know everyone in the room. Mm-hmm. Could we go around and...
Kip Leonard, Executive Director of Marine Exchange of Southern California, operating the vessel traffic service for the ports of LA and Long Beach.
I'm Linda Hunter. I'm with Rincon Consultants. We provide environmental consulting services throughout the state.
Awesome. I'm Aaron. I work with Futureports. I'm like just doing the events here.
And I'm Elizabeth Warren, and I started my own company called Dialed In Partners, and one of my clients is Mitsubishi Cement Corporation, who I'm representing today, who's a member of Futureports.
Hi, I'm Hannah Pons. I lead corporate partnerships and community engagement for a company called Brave Theory. We're a venture advisory, and we support innovation and a lot of initiatives that the commissioner support as well for the ports in science and engineering-led companies.
Hi, my name is Norman Harris. I'm a licensed customs broker. I work for a company called Naminar Global Logistics, a Japanese freight forwarder, 3PO, and a San Pedro resident.
Yeah. Okay. Steve Chester, consultant to the Marine Exchange for External Affairs.
Richard Skaggs, president of Star Environmental Products, environmental company. Worked with the Society of Marine Engineers to set standards for the diesel emissions. And worked in Sacramento with Arnold Schwarzenegger on the inspection meeting on emissions, setting the standards, making sure that industry wasn't punished or helping. And our goal was to make sure that we had cost-effective ways to clean up without destroying the industry.
Jim Grajeda, also an OnStar Environmental Products.
Kat Janovich. In addition to this role, I also have a business strategy consulting, a business ecotech. I wrote a book about the what happened in the last 20 years called Chasing Zero, and I was the co-founder of Brave Theory.
I'm Andrea Casillas. I'm the new executive director of Futureports, and thank you. Nice to meet you all.
Good morning. I'm Shauna Espinoza. I'm the executive officer to the Long Beach Harbor Commissioners.
And I can't let this go. I see Claudette, Brian, Gwen, and Paul. Claudette, you first.
Hi, I'm Claudette Moody. I own my own company, CAM Consulting, a government relations firm. And I've known Sharon a long time. So it's great to see you again.
I'm Paul Bingham from S&P Global. As many of you were at TPM last week, as was I, appreciate the entire community hosting the entirety of the container shipping industry on our company's behalf. I'm a director in our transportation consulting practice, where right now we're working on new long-term cargo forecasts for San Pedro Bay for both ports together. So I'm thrilled to be part of this, and I've enjoyed being at Future Ports events over the years as well. Thank you.
Paul, can you give us a preview? How are things looking?
Well, we're challenged, but there may be, because of things like new proposed port fees that we've never had before, there may be a special interest in having vessels only call San Pedro Bay on the West Coast. So we're not sure what direction yet the policy results may play out in terms of business for San Pedro Bay. And we're doing, consequently, we're doing scenario forecasts, not a single point forecast for the future for cargo for the region.
All right, so one final one for you, Paul. I've got two commissioners and a whole lot of people that care about the ports here. What should we be doing to win more business?
Well, actually, you know, what they've been doing, which is trying to pay attention to the priorities of business, you know, which ultimately determines the use of the port, whether it's directly through the tenants and the carriers or ultimately the beneficial cargo owners that were represented so strongly at TPM. You know, and that's to work together as a community to make sure that the ports are, you know, efficient, are resilient, are performing as best they can environmentally, and also are making clear the signals for the long term, you know, where the ports are going in terms of their capacity and their performance. And I have to say, both ports clearly can point to success right through last year that, you know, they're on track, regain some market share and growing business.
Good morning. Brian Bustamante with Southern California Edison. I'm the senior advisor supporting all the container terminal operations as well as the port.
And our director.
And Gwen.
Good morning, everyone. Gwen Butterfield. I own Butterfield Communications, community and government relations, specializing in the two ports. And today I'm representing my client, Mitsubishi Cement Corporation. And I'm a longtime active in Future Ports and having my own membership most of the years and representing Mitsubishi with Future Ports since I think January of 2011 and other railroad and other clients prior. Very proud to be a longtime Future Port active with Future Ports and a past president and current board member of the Harbor Association of Industry and Commerce. And I will add one thing that HIC was very early in the Port Community Advisory Committee that is no longer existent at the Port of LA. And one of the reasons that Future Ports, you know, in addition to what Elizabeth explained very clearly, started to be a counterbalance is HIC board members had a seat on PCAC for many years and were active in trying to participate in that way. So I'll just add that little 2 cents as a past president of HIC.
Thank you. So this next question is for Kat, it's for Brian, it's for Claudette, it's for Andrea. We're in 20 years. What are the next, you know, 6 months look like? What are the current initiatives that Future Ports is working on? And then I'm going to throw this back to the commissioners to say, are we headed in the right direction?
Well, I think it's time for us to move the Future Ports into the future. As you know, Future Ports is not just solely focused on the ports of LA and Long Beach. We have a little bit more regional perspective, and our board member and chair-elect is Letitia Austin, who had to cancel last minute. She was going to join us via Zoom, but she lives in up north. So it's hard for them to be here in person all the time, but she's very active and she cares deeply about the ports. She shared with us recently also that she serves on other in other groups, in other committees, and she would like to see the port issues to be a priority all the time everywhere, and it's not always the case.
I agree. Well, I was going to say for the next, you know, coming years too, I think, you know, Future Ports is really taking a deep dive into our operations and what we can do internally to kind of restructure our committees and take a look at what our goals and objectives and strategic plan is. So the board is, you know, currently working on that so that we can, you know, better support the ports, including Wainimi and, you know, in the region. So I think that's our main focus in the next 6 months.
I would like to add, we talked about this quite a bit, that I'd like us to lean into the future part of the name and really be supportive of some of the new technologies, new approaches that the ports may be implementing or wish to implement and need a little support from the community in which to do so. So I don't want to lose the advocacy part because that's been my life, you know, or certainly my professional life. So I'm hopeful that we can continue to be good advocates for the issues that are important to the community.
Yeah, I feel like COVID really put a spotlight. Sorry about that. I feel like COVID really put a spotlight on the ports, an even brighter one than was there before. And with that, some unprecedented dollars have come to the ports. And I think Commissioner Weissman kind of hit it spot on, and our ability to support some of those efforts and really lean into how this is beneficial for all, and you know, really just provide commentary to help push those over the finish line. I think there's an opportunity there for us within that. And I think even more broadly, like the ports themselves are looking at projects, but this is going to take a transition throughout the supply chain to rail, to trucking, et cetera. And just looking at it from that lens, I think would pay dividends to the supply chain as a whole.
If I may add something, I think we have some challenges ahead of us, and I think there are some issues that we can tackle more than others, and that these are fuels, whether on the land side or on ocean side. We talk about green shipping corridors, and to me, this is such a hopeful initiative. I was speaking last year at the conference. I did the research on how many other shipping corridors, green shipping corridors we have in the world, because we know about these two working between LA and Long Beach. And with Shanghai and Singapore. So I dig a little bit deeper, and I was so pleased to know that the initiative started in 2021 with the initial target of 6 corridors by the mid-decade, which is 2025. Last year, there were announced more than 45 green shipping corridors. So what does it tell us? That there is a tremendous appetite for international collaboration, sharing lessons learned, despite the fact that all these green shipping corridors connecting different countries, different ports in different economic zones, different priorities, and still people want to learn from one another. They want to share experiences. They want to green their ports. They want to green the route. And so this is just a really amazing area to be in. And then I want to mention the offshore wind. I participated in that big discussions and hosted by the Port of Long Beach and organized by the California Energy Commission. And it was really wonderful to see that despite of the federal uncertainty, the state is committed. There was a commissioner from CEC and our lieutenant governor, and they both committed to push forward with the offshore wind, which would be a great for the economic engine in LA and Long Beach. And so I think some of the items here we absolutely need to talk about and explore and take a deeper dive. And I don't know, Commissioner, if you want to expand.
Sure. Well, I will say two things. It's so first of all, to answer your question, yes, I think what you're planning is very helpful. And then I was going to add fuels, and then Kat mentioned that, and then I'll talk about pure wind. And that is the clean ships are going to come where they can get fueled. And so we need to think about the infrastructure necessary to be able to bunker these fuels. And none of us know yet exactly what's going to be, you know, I mean, the ones that are being talked about, of course, are methanol, LNG, although we see that as a transitional fuel because it has some greenhouse gas drawbacks. And, you know, people are talking about ammonia. And so so we're going to need to bunker whatever it seems like the winner is going to be. And one of the issues is that I don't know how many of you were around when the Port of Long Beach considered putting an LNG terminal in, but the community, of course, was some of the community was against it. And so, and we all saw what happened when the truck turned over with the battery. And so my personal saying is, we can't be afraid, but we have to be careful. There is not a fuel or energy source that isn't either explosive or flammable. So we have to be very careful, but we have to also move ahead. Because if, you know what, I forgot to mention hydrogen when I was talking about the fuels. So we have to, if we don't start now preparing, we are not going to be ready. And there are, what was the figure? I think 75 or 80% of the ships on the order book can use an alternative fuel. And so, or as someone said, those aren't alternative fuels anymore. Those are the fuels. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be ready. And we anticipate, of course, there's going to be some community pushback. And so your support can be very important to both our ports as we look at how are we going to fuel these ships. And then, you know, pure wind, you know, yes, if the federal government does not give us any support for pure wind, I'm sorry, are all of you familiar with what pure wind is?
Yes.
In case people are not, briefly, the Port of Long Beach is going to build a 400-acre heavy-duty terminal for staging and integration of offshore floating wind turbines. And it will be, it's a very expensive proposal. It's in 2023 dollars, it was $4.7 billion. And it's because these turbines are massive. And therefore you need a terminal that can withstand that weight, heavier, certainly more than any of the terminals that we have now. Just to give you some scale, the base of one of these terminals, one of them will fit in Dodger Stadium. Wow. They are as tall as the Eiffel Tower. And wow. So, yes, if the federal government doesn't give us any help, we have to look at different ways. But California, if we're the fifth largest economy in the world, mm-hmm. it can't be that we can't figure out how to do this. Could we do it all with private money? Yes. But I'm sure, as Brian can tell you, the energy would be so expensive that the ratepayers would be up in arms. And so it needs to be a mix of public and private money. And so, but California has a goal of 25 gigawatts of offshore wind by 2045. And Pure Wind is an integral part of getting that done. It's thousands of jobs for this region. Mm-hmm. It doesn't contribute to congestion because the parts are so big that they'll come by barge. And so it's really an opportunity for the state and for our region economically. And of course, and we need the power. We just need more power wherever it comes from. The Port of Long Beach estimates that for us to get to zero emissions, we will need six times the energy that we use now. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking to Edison and they're on board to help us get there. But, and then of course it has, you know, we need renewable power if we want to slow down climate change and at some point begin to reverse it, we need renewable energy.
A couple of years ago, CEC was saying that we need 3 to 5 more power. Now you're talking about 6 times more. So it's,
just for the Port of Long Beach. Yeah. Just for the Port of Long Beach. So, which will make our mayor very happy because of the utility users tax.
Commissioner Williams, what keeps you up at night that an organization like Future Ports can help to alleviate?
Definitely the community outreach, like I mentioned before, just helping educate folks on what is available and what can be available for the future as we transition to these cleaner fuels and energy efficient opportunities. You know, the fueling is an issue. Not being able to have access to the fuel here. We had a zero emission ship call on Port of Los Angeles last year, and it had to bring enough fuel for both trips. You know, that requires that they take a little bit less cargo because it's offset by the fuel, right? But who knows what winning technologies, what winning fuels are going to be the standard in 5 to 10 years, and we kind of have to let that market figure itself out. And then as we when it comes to the trucks, being able to have the infrastructure to fuel those trucks as well. So all of it, this is exciting times for the ports, and you know, being advocates for what is working and then flexible enough to adjust towards other opportunities, I think is really important. But like I said, the advocacy and helping the ports remain on target in terms of our, you know, holding us accountable is really important. And then also being able to advocate in terms of what's going on.
You know, the one thing I should have added, because this is often a question, is there will not be a wind farm off the coast of Southern California. The wind farms are in Central and Northern California. They're 20 to 30 miles offshore. And so they're not like right on people's beaches, but people often think we're going to have a wind farm off Southern California. We just don't have the wind offshore to support it.
That's another issue for them. Well, if I may, Mike, also sure. Add what we also looking at for future ports, moving future ports into the future is strengthening our collaboration with partners like LBCT and showcasing mm-hmm. some of their real world approaches to zero emission, because I think this can spark discussions, this can promote that move towards zero emissions. Also because we have people with amazing expertise on the board and as members. And so we wanna also showcase what they are doing, whether it's a port, whether it's another business. We wanna show all the good cases built, eventually the best practices and.
Mike mentioned doing case studies right. At the board meeting. So, you know, those kinds of things mm-hmm. I think are really important and what future ports can do to, you know, propel that forward.
Yeah, I actually worked with Bright Waves on a documentary about LBCT recently. It's very fun. So it kind of walks through like all the steps to LBCT to, in order to become, you know, incorporate some automation, but also the zero emission approach. I want to be sensitive to everybody's calendar. Does anybody else have questions? I feel like I've had Aaron. Go ahead.
Mike, Leticia's joined us, so you may want to give her a platform.
Absolutely. So, Leticia, welcome. I had not seen you. The way the room is set up, the camera is directly behind me, so I didn't see you join us. But as chair-elect, you know, would love to hear kind of your thoughts. Where's FutureForts heading? And, you know, what feedback based on the conversation we've heard so far are you most excited about?
So I'm excited about coming in as chair of FutureForts. And hopefully, during my tenure, I would work on with the other board members strengthening the importance of ports in California, in Southern California, and just really being more of an advocate as we, you know, are facing, you know, challenges on the federal level. And so I just see that as the direction that I hope future ports will take in the next year.
Aaron, I think you had a question.
I did. I was going to ask, so you guys mentioned that you need to get the energy like 6 times what we have right now. Mm-hmm. What are like the steps that you're taking to get there? Like, what are the things that are going to get us there? Like nuclear power? Like, how do you get that power? That's insane. Like,
we talked to Brian.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's actually been something that we've been working on for years at this point. And I would even go so far back as to say it really started when, you know, the port crafted their original Clean Air Action Plan to really lay the roadmap on where they want to go. I think as a company, we've understood that, you know, there are technologies that, you know, are not fully, I guess there are multiple technologies out there to serve this load. The 6X scenario is one scenario for largely leaning into electrification. We are use that information to do our own studies that help inform how we're doing this long-term planning. I can tell you from a account management scenario where, you know, supporting the ports, it looks very different today than it did, say, a few years back, because we're starting to see these projects start to converge. And it's not just supporting the projects tactically at the terminals, but how do we support the system upstream from those terminals as they start to come together. So a lot of work that takes place in order to make this a reality. We're actively tracking it. I would say that we are meeting with the port on a monthly basis to continue to refine these, in addition to the regular meetings that we typically have just in between those, but on a monthly to look specifically at the long-term scenario planning. Whatever that technology may ultimately end up being, there's going to be an electrical resource likely needed to support it. A lot of work is where I'll go.
Yeah, I know.
And we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Edison could use that right now, some appreciation.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
I'm wondering if I could ask the commissioners, you know, I come from the transportation world and there's always a fear of putting all your eggs, which are very expensive now, in one basket. And so very expensive eggs. And we know that of energy as well. So how do you make sure that you have the diversity of the fuel supply without breaking the bank, trying to accommodate that at your ports? And Leticia, please answer that as well, if you wish.
Yeah, I think about that all the time. Single source of failure is something that keeps me up at night. And so having the redundancies and also the backup systems is something that we need to really weigh in hard to make sure that we protect our national security. It would be horrible if we went from, you know, diversified fuel sources to single source and then end up, you know, having a disconnect, literally. Brings our goods movements to their needs. So making sure that those technologies are being developed, and a lot of the things that we're talking about are still, you know, we're building the plane as we're in midair, and making sure that we have those, that we're well prepared for all the different contingencies is something that I'm very interested in. I don't have the answers around that, but
And that's a huge issue. We, I think since I've been a harbor commissioner, I've been a harbor commissioner for a little over 4.5 years. I think there's only been one summer when the state hasn't called us and said, you have to stop your shore power because we don't have enough electricity. And so, and in fact, in the first year they asked us to shut down LBCT and we said, yeah, we're not doing that. We will stop shore powering. And it's been for about a week, I think, at the most, but we're, you know, so in the terms of the fuels, there, the alternative fuels right now are in short supply and very expensive. But what we, you know, it's when we talk about hydrogen and the environmentalists who we appreciate because they have pushed us to be where we are now and to continue to be green as possible. But when they say, well, hydrogen isn't green right now, well, they're right. But if we don't ever start figuring out how to make it and how to store it, it's never going to be green. But I always say to them, where do you think our electricity comes from? It's not all green yet either. So we have to figure out how to store the fuels, how to create enough of it, and how to make it cost effective. You know, it's as I said, hydrogen, as you probably all know, is very expensive right now. And that's one of the things. And, you know, there's lots of, you know, I'm certainly no scientist, I'm no chemist, but, you know, you see these articles about someone having figured out how to make hydrogen out of seawater without desalinating it. And I don't know if that's going to work. I mean, you know, they've done a little tiny bit in the lab somewhere, but if we don't start using hydrogen and creating the market for it, no one's going to figure out how to make it cheaper. It's got to be volume. And so are we there yet? Certainly not. But if we don't start using these fuels and making them available, we'll never get there.
That's incremental progress. Mm-hmm. It's not all or nothing.
Yep.
And so it's we need to fail forward fast on some technologies, but we need mm-hmm. to keep moving forward and figure out what's mm-hmm. best in the end.
I just want to thank everybody here. I'm so proud of all of you. I lived mm-hmm. here for 85 years. Gina was born here. My wife had lived here. My family all was raised right here. But this group is unbelievable. What we're looking at the future. I've been an environmentalist all my life. I remember in the 40s, my mother would take the garbage in one can, the other ones in the other can, and we would go on the street, and the garbage would go to the pig farm. And my family took me there to show me what we do with recycling. And all the trash, the cans, we had the biggest dump here in San Pedro. And my father took me there, and it separated everything. And it just taught me that we need to all work together mm-hmm. as a group. And this group, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you. Mm-hmm. Gina was born here. He represents the U.S. on sports. On the Olympics and things like that. And he's been with me 20 years. He's an environmentalist. And most of us here are environmentalists. But this group, I've been in Sacramento, Washington. I spent 9 years in Washington. 9 years in Sacramento. This is the best group ever. Because they're looking at the future. I met the commissioners before. They're wonderful. And it's great to have them local right here. And I'm so proud of you guys.
Thank you.
You guys are outstanding. I'm so proud to be part of it.
You know,
we're here. Thanks. We're looking at ways that we can clean the existing fuels at a cost-effective way. We're working on hydrogen to bring the cost down. They're using mirrors and the labs now to take the mirrors to hit the hydrogen and break them up and smaller. And the cost is coming down, but I know that we have 18 hydrogen cars. I worked on that program 18 years ago with Dr. Alan Lloyd and Governor Schwarzenegger on the first hydrogen sales. And the future is so promising, and it's there. The windmills, we've been working with the group with windmills for years. We made them shorter charge over them so the birds would not go in them. But we had the problem with the gears, and so we worked with Shell Oil to come up with a lubricant so we don't burn out the gears
because that was a big problem, and we solved that. Now we're working on hydrogen in the Netherlands because they thought hydrogen would be the next fuel. We've been working on hydrogen since World War II. We were running out of fuel during World War II, not enough fuel, like we're talking about today. So they decided to go with hydrogen for D-Day, and they needed a lubricant. It was 18 scientists developed a lubricant to put in the methanol so we would have enough fuel to go into France. And today, that same technology, we're working with it today. And it's working. It's working the windmills. It's working on methanol at Southwest Institute. They did a study, and the lubricity came down a -7 instead of a +50. So the future is bright, and we have a lot of scientists that are all working on exactly what we're talking about. I worked with Mayor Bradley. He was the first one to go in the harbor with Mr. Seaton at American Press Line, and they lowered the emissions, and they decided that this was the way to go. But at the same time, we had MTBE that was being pushed here, and we decided to go in that direction instead of cleaning the big system here. So we're right back where we started, and we have some of the top scientists in our group, and they're dedicated toward the environment. So we'll keep you guys up to date. And my wife wanted to thank you. Her whole family started in the Camrys here. And she said that she's never seen me quite like this. And same with Gino. I mean, being born here. But I love all of you guys, and thank you again.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
You mentioned Mr. Seaton. I don't know if anybody here besides me knows who that is.
And me.
Oh, yeah. Gwen knows.
He's
yeah.
a great man. I really enjoyed working with him.
You know, I should have mentioned that the Port of Long Beach, like the Port of LA, has an amazing environmental staff. And at the Port of Long Beach, we have released a white paper on alternative fuels, which talks about supply, you know, which ones are suited for which, what are the pros, what are the cons. And so it's on our website. If anyone has any trouble finding it, let us know and we can send it to you and have it distributed. But it's a really, and it has an executive summary for those who are not scientists, but it's really an amazing paper of what do we know at this point in terms of alternative fuels.
Is that the one in Long Beach? Port has that on their website?
Yes.
Okay, we have a white paper. We were the first company to take sulfur out of coal because of China. They had a big problem, and I went there 20 years ago, and we finally did the white paper. We introduced it to the scientific world and been bought 2 years ago. So, again, I want to look at that paper.
Well, I just wanted to mention, I think you spoke to exactly what the mission of Future Ports is. And, you know, it's to be environmental stewards for our business and industry. So, I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do. And you said it so well. So, you know, that's what we're advocating for, and education is all about with the organization. So it's really great to hear you, put it out there.
I don't think anybody even know how much the community, I know the captain does, but the San Pedro community and Long Beach community, I used to live at 2303 Ocean Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And I was raised here in San Pedro, but when I was going to college, I went down Long Beach for a while. But I don't know how to tell you, 85 years old, yeah. And just, it's wonderful.
I also encourage anyone who's willing to join us on our monthly environmental justice call that we have every second Thursday from 1 till 3. I typically try to join those calls as well. But the Port of Los Angeles, usually there's 30 folks on those calls. It's all by Zoom, so it makes it easy for people to access. But it'd be great to have a good mix of subject matter experts and industry folks that really it creates a better discussion the more educated that the committee members' participation is. So, thank
great.
You.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you.
And I know we are coming up on time.
I was just going to say one thing, because we've talked about reducing emissions, and Mario Padero would be very disappointed in me if I didn't say that we have reduced, while increasing our cargo since 2005 by 40%, more than 40%, we've reduced nitrogen oxides by 71%, diesel particulate matter by 92%, and sulfur oxides by 98%. And every time I see or say those numbers, It's really impressive to me.
And you can see those numbers in the lobby of the
You board. Can. They're very big numbers.
Yeah. Kat, did you, as our chair, do you want to close this meeting for us?
Yes. Thank you so much for coming. I think we had great discussions. We love the energy. We would like to get all your thoughts, papers, everything that you want to add, you want to see differently. Please reach out to Andrea and Aaron. Please get engaged with us. Help us shape the future events, the future programming, and those on screen as well, and building that advocacy and education together, bringing the community together. I think there's so much work to be done, and no one organization can tackle all the issues and or all the advocacy. So I think we need as many as we can, and I think every perspective is a little bit different, and so I think we all have a purpose to be here.
And just one plug for our Strongports event on June 12th. We'll be continuing this discussion about the past and the future, and we'd love to have you all join us there on June 12th.
Definitely. Yeah. And then one other thing, because this is focused for students and people that want to become members, we do have a student membership with Futureports. So if anyone wants to join, it's a very good rate. So very affordable for students and for younger generations too.
Well, and for our 20th anniversary, members will get a 20% discount on membership. And then returning members will get a 20% discount on their Strongports registration. So we're running kind of a 20th anniversary promotion.
And speaking of students, we occasionally have people that buy whole tables and they have extra seats. So usually if we know in advance, we give those seats to students.
Great.
Well, and let me just say how much we appreciate Futureports. We appreciate the support and the conversation and knowing what's on your mind. So thank you so very much.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks everyone.
Thank you all.
Yeah, have a great one.